from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on this morning's Forum program, first we'll talk about rising rates for PG&E customers. A typical PG&E bill will increase by $7.50 a month now that state regulators have approved the company's plan to collect extra revenue for improving its gas pipelines and electrical grids. But with further pending rate increases in the works, consumer advocates worry about affordability for low-income Californians. Then at 9:30, the AIDS Memorial Grove in Golden Gate Park was a target of unidentified vandals recently. They destroyed trees and benches and shattered the windows of a city truck. And sadly, the park is no stranger to vandalism. Many similar incidents occurred earlier this year. We'll discuss ways to combat the vandalism and why it's difficult to prevent and bring to justice. Forum is next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. On Thursday, California's PUC regulators voted unanimously to permit PG&E to collect over $2.3 billion from its customers over the next 3 years, which translates to an increase next month of an additional $7.50 a month to your PG&E bill. The extra revenue slated for PG&E's improving gas pipelines and electrical grids comes in the wake of ongoing criticism of what has repeatedly been characterized as the cozy relationship between the utility and the regulator, a character which erupted when emails concerning the 2010 San Bruno pipeline explosion were released and a fine of $2.25 billion for that tragic blast was imposed on PG&E by the PUC. A federal indictment also was issued over circumstances surrounding the San Bruno explosion, which could result in over $1 billion in additional fines to the utility. In this morning's opening segment of Forum, we want to look into the PG&E rate increase, as well as the near certainty of more rate increases to follow for many of you listening in this morning among the 15 million PG&E customers from Eureka to Bakersfield. And I ought to mention that the matter involving the explosion and the indictment will be taken up in court today, so this is timely. It's also timely because further questions were raised over the weekend in an article in the San Francisco Chronicle about PG&E's ties to the California Public Utilities Commission. San Bruno officials say the recently released emails provide the best yet evidence of too close ties between PG&E and the commission, and the emails make it clear that PG&E planned, organized, and funded a state-sponsored conference. With us in studio this morning is Jonathan Marshall, spokesperson for PG&E. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us. Also good to have Mark Toney here with us in studio, who is executive director at TURN, the Utility Reform Network. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael.
Glad to have you both. And Jonathan Marshall, let me begin with you. We are going to talk about the rates. That's what you're here to talk about, I realize. But let's talk first about this cozy relationship. It's often been characterized by that adjective. And Michael Peavy, the head of the PUC, even made a joke about it, talking about love. I don't want to necessarily hear about love. But these recently released emails seem to, well, virtually word for word, show the same language from public relations staffer for PG&E and the PUC.
Well, Michael, I haven't read these emails, so I can't comment in detail, but I don't believe these had to do with official commission business. The commissioners are independent of PG&E, and the rate cases that we're here to discuss are generally decided by independent administrative law judges who are independent civil servants distant from PG&E. And there are a host of protections built into the regulatory system to ensure that a host of interveners are involved and there's a great deal of public scrutiny over the decisions. So I don't think this allegation really has merit over the issues we're here to discuss.
Well, this is half of what PG was asking. I mean, the money that has been allocated was half of what PG and asked it for. And none of this revenue, at least according to everything I've read, is going to pay for these fines. There's no connection supposedly to the— it's all about safety and reliability for gas and electrical systems. I understand that. But there's been criticism, too, that there really wasn't much analysis by PG&E of the impact of these bills.
Well, not true. I mean, we've provided details on what the likely customer bill impact will be. These cases are all about trying to balance the importance of safety and reliability on the one hand, of the state's need to build reliable 21st century infrastructure, against the issue of affordability, which is very much on our minds. We know that our customers, especially in today's economic environment, can't afford unlimited bills. But we keep in mind that our bills still are well below the national average. And we have a host of programs both to help low-income customers afford energy more inexpensively and to help customers manage their energy, reduce the amount that they use, and lower their bills. So affordability is very much on our minds these days.
Mark, Tony, though you have pointed out, I think you've said publicly, this may not be a lot, $750 a month for a utility executive with a salary of a million or more, but it can be a huge amount to a low-income worker or somebody with stagnant wages.
$750 a month is a large increase because the bills are already too high for many PG&E customers. In the first 6 months of 2014, PG&E shut off utility service to 148,000 customers in its service territory because they were behind in their bills. That's a 67% increase from the first 6 months of 2011 in terms of shutoffs. I think the numbers speak for themselves. PG&E bills are getting too high for a large number of customers, and we have to do something to keep them manageable. Remember, every dollar spent on unnecessary rate increases is a dollar not available for renewable energy, for energy efficiency, and for our other climate goals that are so important.
And there are more bill hikes to come. This is,
well,
I mean,
that's the problem.
Saying,
right now, PG&E has two rate increases that it's requesting from the California Public Utilities Commission. The first is an extra $5 a month for gas pipeline improvements. And the second is $10 a month customer service fee, a fixed fee that they want to impose on everybody's bill that's going to raise bills for the vast majority of customers who are low energy users.
And we should mention the public hearings for those gas increase, for that gas increase proposal will be held next month. But what about when you hear Jonathan Marshall say, and he's right, it's below the national average?
The reason that it's below the national average, the utility bills in California, is because the weather in California is milder than the national average. We don't have quite as extreme winters in particular than the rest of the country. But the fact is that the cost of living in California is far higher than the rest of the country. People aren't just paying utility bills. We're buying food. We're paying rent. We are paying to live. So all of it has to be put into account when you look at affordability. It's not just a utility bill.
So, Jonathan Marshall, can you specify what some of these low-income programs that you have going for, that is, people of low income are?
Sure. The biggest is the CARE program, which more than a million of our customers take part in. On the gas side, it affords them a 20% discount on their gas bill. On the electric side, discounts now of 44%. Nearly a historic high. Our rates are now the lowest in the state for CARE customers. We also have programs to provide free energy efficiency upgrades for low-income households, also special bill payment plans to spread bills evenly throughout the course of the year to make it easier to pay. But I think we need to go back and
realize— Can I go back to something else for a moment, though? What about all these dramatic increase in shutoffs that was alluded to by Mark?
Shutoffs are a very unfortunate fact of life that we take great pains to avoid. We provide repeated efforts to work with customers to give them a chance to pay their bills. Ultimately, the state needs to decide if there's a big enough problem, what it wants to do about it. PG&E can't ultimately have unlimited numbers of customers not pay their bills. I think we can realize there's a social problem here. It's not a specific PG&E problem.
But there's also, Mark, Tony, I think as you and others in turn and concerned about customer rates have pointed out, there's a proposal to essentially match customer service charges. This would penalize those who conserve energy, would it not?
Well, that's the problem. When you charge people $10 a month before they use a single ounce of electricity, it does penalize people who conserve energy. It penalizes solar customers. It penalizes low-income customers. And our point is people should pay for the electricity they use, not for not using electricity. It just does not make sense.
Jonathan Marshall.
Of course, the vast majority of utilities across the country and in California, in municipal utilities, do charge monthly fees to cover some of the fixed costs of the system. Think about your water bill. You look at that next time you get one. You'll see there's a big fixed monthly fee for the cost of the meter and associated infrastructure. That's because we are using the power grid, even if we don't have the lights on. Being able to flip the switch, turn on our lights, our computer, means we have access to one of the most advanced forms of infrastructure in the country today. That costs money. And I might add that this small fee that's being discussed hasn't taken effect yet, was approved in principle by state law last year, and if it took effect, would result in lower costs for every unit of energy you buy. PG&E would make no money off of this proposed change.
All right, let me do this. This is a half-hour segment, so I want to hear from listeners, and I want to hear particularly from those of you who have concerns about your PG&E bill or who have questions about it. And I mean, frankly, I'll ask for those who feel that $7.50 doesn't sound like a lot on the face of it, but there may be more rate increases. There almost inevitably will be. And so do you face a hardship with this? How do you respond? And do you think that you're getting a fair shake from the utility? I'd like to hear from you, and you can join us now at our toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786. So feel free to call us with your thoughts, your questions, or your comments. Again, the toll-free number available is 866-733-6786. There are other ways to join the program. You can email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, and you can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. Mark Tony, was there enough, scrutiny of this decision? I know, for example, PG&E has said they're not just a public utility. They also have private ownership, and they do have, as I believe it was pointed out by Jonathan Marshall almost at the beginning here, they do have judges sitting and deciding and so forth. You feel there was enough scrutiny?
Look, the good news is that the CPUC cut PG&E's request by over 50%. They came in asking for $5 billion over the next 3 years, and they ended up with about $2.3 billion. That's the good news. The bad news is that the CPUC and PG&E continue to have a too cozy relationship. What just came out in the news, in fact, was an example of the CPUC agreeing to be a front for PG&E for that natural gas safety conference that they were planning to put together as a private invitation-only affair. And it's only because the city of San Bruno questioned the propriety of this conference that the CPUC decided to cancel it.
Well, the language was in the emails really identical. I mean, it was as if they were working together. But just how much does that affect ratepayers, really? I mean, you get down to that basic question. Michael Peavy, his resignation is being called for by Congresswoman Speer and others. Some say this is a tempest in a teapot. These two have worked together all along, but they don't necessarily work outside of the public interest.
The issue is when you have a pattern of emails, this is not the first time that we've had very cozy emails between PG&E and Commissioner President Peavy, then the question is, what do you think they're saying in private? That's not in emails. The issue is that the PUC is supposed to be the watchdog guarding the hen house, not the fox guarding the hen house. And the problem is that it's us customers who are the hens who are getting eaten by the foxes right now.
And when you hear that metaphor, Jonathan Marshall, you respond in what way?
Well, Mark, let me ask you, who is the assigned commissioner on our general rate case?
The assigned commissioner on a general rate case is Commissioner Florio.
And who was he? Did you ever work with him by chance?
Commissioner Florio used to work at TURN. The issue is that the CPUC as an institution is simply not doing their job. And it doesn't matter to us where Commissioner Florio or any other commissioner worked. before they served on the commission. The important thing is that as an institution, the CPUC stand up for the public, stand up to defend ratepayers, and the fact is they're not doing it.
In other words, you're saying they're not fulfilling their obligation or responsibility of being
regardless
a watchdog. You don't feel they're being a watchdog.
They're not being a watchdog no matter who it is.
Here's the bottom line, then. I don't think we should impugn the commissioners. We certainly shouldn't impugn the administrative law judges who spent 2 years studying 3,500 pages of testimony, 12,000 pages of associated documents, the testimony of 20 interveners. These people do a really hard job. The 750-page decision was a model of detail and clarity and analysis. We didn't get what we wanted. You didn't get what you wanted. We can disagree about that. It's fair to have a public discussion about that, but I don't think this discussion should descend to impugning the motives and relationships.
Well, I also mentioned this. That Congresswoman Spear had asked for the resignation of Michael Peavy. So did the former PUC commissioner on this program.
I think that safety conference had nothing to do with this rate case.
All right. Well, let's talk about the rates and let's talk about whatever listeners want to talk about. We've got a whole bunch of them lined up that want to talk. And so we'll go first to you, Mike. You're on the air. Hi.
Hi. A question addressing a remark earlier by the PG&E representative. He said that they have to be conscious of costs to the people who use PG&E services in terms of raising rates to make their gas delivery network safer. And I was just wondering what we were all paying for before the Burlingame explosion. Wasn't safety and maintenance of the network included in the budget at that time? And, well, that's my first point. And
let's get a response from Jonathan Marshall for
sure.
The first point. Thank you.
Absolutely. Safety and reliability were very much on our minds, but we've all learned a lot. There were aspects of our gas system, of our record keeping that we didn't fully understand or appreciate.
That are now under criminal indictment.
Yes, and that have been the subject of tremendous scrutiny from regulatory agencies and others. We've taken accountability for that. We've done a massive overhaul of the company structure. We brought in a new CEO, a new executive vice president for gas operations. We've pressure tested an unprecedented 500 miles of pipeline, replaced more than 100 miles of pipeline, built a new gas control center. We're well on our way to a massive upgrade of our system. And we have committed or spent $2.7 billion of shareholder funds, not customer funds, but shareholder funds to do this. The rate cases we're talking about now are looking forward to the future to further modernizing 21st century infrastructure to benefit our customers.
And you can say with authority that none of this money is going to even indirectly go to pay for the fines that have been.
Absolutely.
Let me thank the caller. We're going to get another caller on here. That's you,
Don. May I give an answer?
Yeah, Mark Tony, go ahead.
Yes. Tern believes that the pipelines need investments to make them more safe. The question is, who should pay for them? There's a difference between before San Bruno and after San Bruno. In April 2014, a CPUC report documented that out of 20 PG&E pipeline records that were chosen at random, auditors found that 11 of those records were missing, erroneous, or filled with inconsistencies. That's less than 50% that were accurate. And that's an F or a flunking grade in anybody's classroom. Sure, those pipelines need to be inspected so that the records can be filled out and corrected. But ratepayers should not pay for these kind of mistakes. PG&E should pay for these kind of mistakes.
So you say they're still paying by proxy, in effect, aren't you?
We are still paying for things that should have already been done.
For their mistakes.
Done. Yes,
yeah.
For PG&E mistakes.
Okay. Let me go to Don here. Don, go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, sir. You're on the air.
Yeah. This is outrageous. PG&E, for one thing, as a utility, they're guaranteed a certain profit. That they should also be allowed to be a corporation is outrageous. In the 50s, I bowled with these people when I was living up in San Francisco. And back then in the late 50s, they were referring to the operation as Pacific Graft and extortion. And that is exactly what it is.
All right, sir, let me thank you for the call. And we're getting a lot of this kind of anger at PG&E. Let me give you some more examples from the email here, Jonathan Marshall. Steve says, it seems to me any organization that is critical to the public's well-being, utilities, for instance, should be nonprofit and operate in the public interest before they operate or private profit for stakeholders. Why is this not the law? Bess says, is it just me or does it seem as if the PUC is a rubber stamp for anything PG&E wants when it comes to rate increases? And David writes online, so PG&E has zero profit. The PUC rate increased is essentially a state subsidy for infrastructure, which for most businesses is an operating cost before profit. This is lame. I mean, I don't know how you want to field all these, but you get the sense here that you've got public relations a bit of a nightmare.
Well, there are certainly some members of the public who are very upset at PG&E. Fortunately, there are many others who appreciate the service we provide every day. They see our gas and electric crews up and down their streets performing work to make their infrastructure safer, and they appreciate it. I would just correct a couple of misimpressions. We are not guaranteed a profit. We're given an authorized rate of return, which is decided after multi-year hearings. And in recent years, we have not earned our authorized rate of return. We've made a lot less money. In fact, since San Bruno, PG&E has lost $7 billion in market value compared to other utilities. This is a gigantic hit to shareholders. I don't think most people appreciate how big that is. You can argue whether that's warranted or not, but PG&E is not guaranteed its profits.
Well, since you mentioned shareholders, I want to bring another caller, and that's Pat from Oakland. Pat, go ahead.
Yes, I would like to say that during a large percentage, or if not all, of the last 25 years, management bonuses were based on earnings per share, the last number calculated in the financial statements, which means every single penny management saved on doing routine maintenance and repair went into their bonus calculation. These decisions have been management malfeasance, not ratepayer non-payment, but management malfeasance. And the only way to make management more responsible is to give it to the shareholders. Management malfeasance is a shareholder cost, not a ratepayer cost. I'll take my answer off air. Thank you.
All right, let me go to you on that whole question, Mark Tony, of malfeasance, management malfeasance.
The problem that PG&E has is that they've lost the trust of their customers. And it's not just San Bruno. The whole smart meter rollout fiasco, the whole Prop 16 trying to put municipal utilities out of business, and then all of the negligence that led up to the San Bruno explosion. The issue is that the PG&E gas and electric crews, the people who work on the streets, are the best workers that anybody could ever want. The issue is not PG&E employees. The issue is PG&E executives and management.
Some of whom may find themselves in jail, actually, with this indictment that's going to court today. Here's a tweet from a listener. It says, doesn't this amount to customers paying the fines imposed for the utility's negligence? You would say yes, Mark, and Jonathan, you would
actually
say no.
Michael, why are you saying that PG&E executives may be going to jail?
Well, there's an indictment.
There is no indictment against any individuals at PG&E.
At this point, I believe you are correct, but there are who are pursuing the possibility of moving this indictment forward.
Insight into the goings-on of the grand jury.
I don't have any insight into the grand jury.
Really important that we not mischaracterize what has happened.
You know that there are many people that would like to see executives go to jail. I mean, that goes without saying. You heard some of the enmity that's come out forward, Aaron.
And if that's the standard on which we base public policy, Michael, that's not one you've ever followed, I think.
No, and I'm not privy to the grand jury. You're right about that. We'll move forward, though. We're moving into a different direction when we return. Thank you both. Glad to have you with us, Jonathan Marshall, Mark Tony. I'm Michael Krasny.